This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at tsn1290.ca, we welcome you to NHL This Week. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Joel Marcoux. We welcome you to the program. You can reach us here in studio on Twitter at IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, good evening to you both. How are you? You're looking well on this Wednesday evening, the day after the night before where the Jets have a 4-0 victory over the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, good evening, boys. It's pretty exciting around town right now. Everybody's talking about the Jets' pretty convincing 4-0 win last night, and you know the fact that they've got points in their last 5 games. So things are good, Drew.
Things are good over here, too. Thanks.
Well, and let's get right into it. And, of course, we start with last night's Jets-Blackhawks game. As I mentioned, a 4-0 victory for the Jets, who improved to 9-7-2 on the season as a result of the victory. 4-0-1 in their last 5 games played. It was a night of firsts for the Jets. The first shutout of the season for Connor Hellebuyck, the first career NHL goal for Josh Morrissey, and the first goals of the season for Chris Thorburn and Nick Patan. And then, for good measure, Patrick Laine gets his NHL-leading 12th goal as the Jets take a 1-0 lead into the third period and pound the Blackhawks in that third to make it a 4-0 victory. Your takeaway from last night's game? I know a lot of people very excited about that result. A lot of people thinking that the sky is the limit for this Jets team. Is that something you subscribe to, or are you subscribing to maybe pump the brakes a little bit? It was a good game, and they've been playing well as of late, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, I don't subscribe to the sky is the limit, but it was exciting. It was aggressive, smart, skilled hockey. I mean, they played that full 200-foot game. We can pull out all the cliches that we want, but they really did not give you an inch, and it kind of looked like the similar style of play that we saw a couple of years ago, that 14-15 season when they were minus a bunch of blue liners for that 5-6 week stretch, and they just plucked anybody into the lineup, and whoever followed the coach's system to a T, it was going to put the team in a position to win. And that's what we're seeing right now. They're first on the puck. They're winning the battles. They're getting the pucks on net. They're skating all night, and it's actually a joy to watch right now. Is it sustainable? That part we don't know, but from top to bottom, it's interesting to see how these young guys are coming in. Dano producing, Kopp producing, Patan producing, Connor Hellebuyck finally grabbing the bowl right now. You know, he was given that back-to-back opportunity last week, got pulled at MSG, and since then he's stopped. Since after going back in after Michael Hutchinson got the call, he's stopped 105 of 111 shots. I think he's the guy moving forward. I think the big questions are going to be, once this $20 million worth of players returns, what do you do?
Yeah, Joel, and with the exception of maybe the second period where the Chicago Blackhawks, I thought, really dictated the pace, I thought the Jets were dictating the pace for the majority of the game. I'd say two-thirds of the game, the Jets were really controlling most of the play. Not to say that the Blackhawks didn't have some chances, but to me, the key part of that game, the turning point, and Paul Edmonds actually used this as his turning point, had to be killing off that 5-on-3.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you look at, you know, what was going on in that game, and it was only 1-0. And so they kill off the 5-on-3, and if the Hawks score there, they get some momentum. And obviously in the third period, the Jets get the 2 quick goals in 11 seconds, and the game was over after that. But certainly the Winnipeg Jets have shown, I think, guys, here, 18 games into the season, that not only can they keep up with most teams, they might be faster than most teams. I mean, with the exception of a few teams, I think you got to say maybe that the Jets are a top 5 speed team in the NHL. And, you know, you have, you know, guys that aren't necessarily the fastest guys, a guy like Chris Thorburn or even a guy like Patrick Laine. But when you look at guys like Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, and even a guy like Toby Enstrom or Dustin Byfuglien, Mark Scheifele, I mean, Kyle Connor when he's in the lineup, Matthew Perreault. I mean, this is a very fast team. I realize some of the guys I named there are injured, but this is a team right now that is able to trade goals with the best of the teams. And with the exception of maybe that New York Rangers game, which I even thought that the Jets played pretty well in, it was really just that second period where they let in all those goals and Connor Hellebuyck was pulled. But they've shown, guys, that they're not – slow compared to many teams. And, you know, it's pretty impressive to watch. You know, Joel mentioned the depth. I mean, they beat the Chicago Blackhawks. And don't forget, Drew, the Chicago Blackhawks came in here undefeated in 11, 9-0-2 in 11. Corey Crawford was the hottest goalie in the league. And the Winnipeg Jets defeat them 4-0 without Brian Little, without Matthew Perreault, without Tyler Myers, without Kyle Connor, Joel Armia. I mean, they were without eight regulars last night. So give them a lot of credit. I mean, you know, they haven't won the Stanley Cup yet. But right now they're sitting, you know, second in the Western Conference. They've played more games than all the other teams. But still, they're sitting pretty right now, heading into this long road trip coming up, five games in a week and a half. So, I mean, things are looking good. Paul Maurice and the rest of the Jets have to be very happy with the way they've played here, because we knew it was going to be a very tough month of November.
Yeah, he said his team is finally starting to understand the way that they're capable of playing. And certainly that is probably linked to his system, which is if you execute it, you're going to put yourself in a position to win by not giving the team another inch by skating. We saw the Pittsburgh Penguins win the Stanley Cup last season. Yeah, they have some superstars on that team for sure, but their depth players carried a lot of that load too. And who do they have on D after they lost a couple of blue liners? You know, for lack of a better way of saying it, some spare parts, but they just stayed on you. They created that go, go, go type of pace, not reinventing the wheel. Hockey's always been a fast game, but you're seeing it out there where when you're not giving the opposition any time out there, you're going to stymie them. And that's what the Jets have been doing.
Well, that's the beauty. Sorry, Joel. That's the beauty of speed, is that when you make a mistake, having the speed to get back and prevent the mistake turning into a goal into your own net is, you know, is certainly a, it's a game changer.
Yeah.
You know, there were a number of times yesterday where it looked like the Blackhawks were going to be coming in on odd man rushes due to turnovers or whatever might have been happening in the neutral zone, that the Jets' speed prevented the opportunity from manifesting itself. And you know, we see it in the NHL all the time. You know, for a lot of years, it was a big man's game where the you know, everybody was looking for size and the, you know, grind you down below the goal line. The Ducks way, the Kings way, the St. Louis Blues way, the Columbus Blue Jackets way. Big, tough, grind you down low. And then you see, you know, then the Blackhawks style of speed and the Penguins last year who win the Stanley Cup based on speed. And so it is a copycat league, of course. And now the copycat, the thing to copy is the speed. And from my perspective, speed is the one thing that it's hard to neutralize, because you know, if you have the puck on your stick and somebody's on you immediately, boy, you better be quick with your decisions. And we've seen players. Some players are more adept at being quick on the puck with their decision-making than other players. Zach Bogosian, a guy, you know, that jumps to mind as a guy who had all the physical tools.
But would sometimes panic with that pass.
But would panic if a guy was on him quickly, because maybe he didn't think the game quite as fast as a guy like Nikolaj Ehlers, Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele, all those guys, they think the game really quick. And so that's the beauty of speed, and that's the beauty of sort of having that bang-bang hockey sense that the Jets, I think, really up and down the lineup, particularly when they're healthy, they do seem to have.
Yeah, and you have to give the Jets' D-Core a lot of credit, shutting down a top offensive team in the league. Josh Morrissey and Dustin Byfuglien, I don't think, you know, it can be understated how big of an impact those two hits in the first period had. Josh Morrissey with what we all, I think, would agree was a legal hit on Vinny Hinostroza, and Dustin Byfuglien with a hit on Richard Panik. Both big hits, and I think the Jets were dictating the physical tone of the game as well. And I wanted to play a clip of Josh Morrissey after the game, and I thought it was really interesting what he said, because I think, you know, the partnership of Dustin Byfuglien and Josh Morrissey on the back end is really a perfect marriage of the two skill sets. And I think Josh Morrissey is proving that when he has a guy like Dustin Byfuglien out there, a veteran in this league, a guy, you know, that is out there protecting him, not that Josh Morrissey can't protect himself, I think they're doing an excellent job as a top pair.
Here's Josh Morrissey post-game last night talking about that.
I mean, that's for, I guess, the rest of the league to decide. We're just trying to get better every day. We have a young team right now. We have lots of guys, you know, that are called up and playing great and doing their thing and just stepping in and filling those roles. So, I think it's more just for us in our own room. We know, you know, we can play like that. We can play, you know, a tough defensive game, but obviously we know we have the scoring when it's there, so, and when we need it. So it's just a game for us to take confidence going on this big road trip.
Congrats.
Definitely more. You know, obviously, you score it, and it's exciting, and, you know, the crowd's going wild, and And, you know, you realize you score your first goal, but then it's back to work in 30 seconds. So now to be kind of after the game and knowing that, that I accomplished that and that's something that you dream about your whole life, it's pretty special. Well, it's just a great group of guys. You know, from the older guys, the leadership's great. I mean, Wheels and Buff and Scheif and all the guys, not just wearing letters, have been great with us young players. But I think what's been huge is the young guys stepping in have just came to work every day, tried to get better, tried to learn. The coaching staff's been teaching us a lot and trying to get us better every day. And, you know, we've been having fun with it, too. And I think that's, you know, that just really has helped our games.
How much of your offensive side of the game is just your confidence to be able to do this stuff now?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me coming into the NHL, you know, I know I'm not going to play unless I'm good on defense. So for me, I really have wanted to get my defensive game better over the last year, especially in the minors last season. And I think coming into the league, I mean, I wasn't kind of trying to come in the first day and you know, build Rome offensively. So just wanted to start off this season with, you know, solid D and keep that going. And I think as time goes on, the confidence comes, and it's starting to come a little bit more. But that's my game. I'm just trying to play the same way every night and be consistent.
I'm just amazed that an NHL player knows the reference about Rome being built in a day. That wasn't a typical cliche. I'm shocked.
Well, Josh Morrissey's an articulate guy, and it was actually earlier in that audio clip, the first minute of the audio clip, when he talks more about playing with Dustin Byfuglien. But, I mean, this guy, I think, Drew, we've talked a lot about Patrick Laine this year.
Uh-huh.
We've talked a lot about Mark Scheifele,
uh-huh.
Nikolai Ehlers.
Uh-huh.
We haven't, I don't think, given Josh Morrissey enough credit for how well he's playing.
Uh-huh.
And he scores his first goal last night. He might only have 3 points in 18 games. But to me, it's the way he's playing defensively, going up against the team's top lines. Last night, Dustin Byfuglien and Josh Morrissey went up against the Taves Kane line. And Ryan Hartman was on it after Hinostroza was out of the lineup. But those guys did an excellent job, I thought. And they continue to go against teams' top lines and, you know, excelling. And I think Josh Morrissey, you know, just quickly here, this is a guy that wanted to be in the NHL last year, Joel.
Yeah.
And I think he's showing that he doesn't want to go back to the A.
I don't think the A really is an option right now. Because
no.
A month ago at this point in time, if Jacob Trouba had signed a contract before the season started, Jacob Trouba was expected to play the left side of the defense. The way Josh Morrissey's been playing, there's no need for Jacob Trouba to move to the left side when everybody's healthy, when Myers is healthy on the right side. There's no need for it because Morrissey has filled that role that a lot of people weren't certain he was going to be able to fill at the start of the season.
And when you talk about pressure-packed moments, I mean, this guy's resume is chock full of that. This, you have to rewind a couple of years ago when he was done with PA. He went to go play with the St. John's Ice Caps in the playoffs, all the way to that Calder Cup run, back to Jeter the next year, World Juniors, Memorial Cup, and then back to the A for a full campaign with the Manitoba Moose. So this guy's well-traveled, and of course, like you touched on, well-spoken. I mean, he wasn't he the Scholastic Player of the Year in the WHL his final year anyways?
No, there you go. That could very well be the case, because he certainly, yes, Sean is giving the thumbs up,
yeah.
So he's verifying your comment there. Certainly was a well-spoken guy. I'm sure he'll learn how to speak in cliches in no time, but
yeah, exactly.
For now, we might as well enjoy a verbose and well-spoken NHL player, and Josh Morrissey with the game-winning goal, his first career NHL goal last night as the Jets defeat the Blackhawks 4-0. They shift their focus to tomorrow night in the city of brotherly love. When we come back, we preview the Jets and the Flyers. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Twenty minutes after the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, rather NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. I sometimes get the names of the shows confused. I'm not very bright, as you see. Josh Morrissey needs to teach me a thing or two about being a scholastic athlete, or really about being an athlete, because I don't have that going for me either.
Well, Drew, when you have 16 days and 9 games,
yeah,
which is what we've had so far in November,
uh-huh,
That's a lot of hockey.
You realize I haven't played in any of those games.
Yeah.
So, you know, my contribution has been minimal.
With the injuries that the Jets have had.
I'm next man up. Yeah, I'm staying in game shape. You know, game shape being Mario Lemieux circa 1985, but game shape nonetheless. Anyways, this segment of the program brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Mark Forward is in town. Very sought-after comedian. He's in town all week. Sold out the joint last night. Tickets, I believe, still available for tonight's 8 p.m. show. Get them quickly. And, of course, some great upcoming comedians. Jay Farrow from Saturday Night Live and Darren Rose. You know him as from Mr. D and Match Game. He's coming back to Rumors. So tickets available at RumorsComedyClub.com.
Drew, speaking of Jay Farrow,
yes,
who was previously an SNL cast member.
Certainly.
I don't know if you guys saw Saturday Night Live on Saturday. I thought it was unbelievable.
Now, were you more of a fan of Chappelle or were you more of a fan of A Tribe Called Quest?
Both.
Because I know you're a big Quest fan.
I like Tribe Called Quest. I like Busta Rhymes, who came in there at the end. And I've always been a big Dave Chappelle fan. So, and I mean, the opening montage, you know, tribute to Leonard Cohen, pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I thought Chappelle's monologue was good. I mean, more Dave Chappelle in the world is you're going to laugh more, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
He's an interesting cat, obviously. I mean, he walked away from so many millions when his show went off, when he just sort of abruptly canceled his own show. And I think he went to Africa for a number of years and things. He's definitely a different guy, but he's certainly a funny guy at that. Anyways, gents, the Jets head to Philadelphia as part of game one of their 5-game road trip. I believe it's the longest road trip of the season.
Yep, it is.
They head to Philly tomorrow night. This is a Philadelphia team that is certainly offensively inclined, second in goals for in the NHL with 57, but a team that is woeful in their own zone and in goaltending. 30th in goals against, given up 62 goals so far in only 17 games played, and they have the worst team save percentage. An ungodly number in this day and age in the NHL, an .870 save percentage, which is hard to believe that you can be that bad. You know, this isn't 1975 where, you know, that might have been more acceptable. This is 2016. That's a bad defensive team, a bad goaltending team, but a good offensive team.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew. And guys, I think there are a lot of similarities between the Winnipeg Jets and the Philadelphia Flyers. Both teams are top five in the league right now in goals for. I believe the Jets are fourth or fifth. Might have changed yesterday. And both teams are, I believe, bottom five in goals against. The Jets might be just outside of that bottom five, but they're certainly in the bottom 10 in goals against. And Connor Hellebuck is starting to play better than he was earlier in the season.
Jets are 23rd in goals against in the NHL. 24th, having given up 50 goals. And then in terms of their goals for...
That shutout helped them.
The shutout certainly helps. And goals for, they're 6th. They're tied for 5th. Tied for 4th, with the Chicago Blackhawks and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
So, Drew, two really good offensive teams. And right now, I would say that they're below average defensively, and I think the Jets are going to be better now that Jacob Trouba's back, and especially when Tyler Myers is back, Joel. But when you look at the Philadelphia Flyers, I mean, they're getting, speaking of, you know, being a little bit top-heavy like the Chicago Blackhawks, it's the same cast of characters,
always.
Right? Claude Giroux, Jake Voracek, you know, guys like Braden Schenn, you know, Travis Konechny, a rookie there, has put some goals out on the board there. Ivan Provorov is a rookie defenseman who's taken, you know, some time to develop. So right now, the biggest problem with the Philadelphia Flyers is, guess what? Goaltending.
Uh-huh.
And Michael Neuwirth is out for over a month, 4 to 6 weeks.
Sprained knee.
And Steve Mason, who actually was pretty good last year. Let's not forget the Flyers made the playoffs last year.
Uh-huh.
And they might have gotten out in the first round. But, I mean, this Flyers team isn't a weak team. So I look at the way the Jets are playing right now, and you'd say, okay, well, you should be able to go into Philadelphia, and you should be able to get 2 points. But, you know, the Flyers lost their last game. You know, they're kind of playing .500 hockey right now, but they're well coached with Dave Hakstol there. And they've got a lot of offensive weapons. So, you know, Shane Gostisbehere in his second year, you know, is not quite putting up the numbers, but he's a guy who's a threat to jump up into the rush. So, I mean, this is going to be a tough game. You're kicking off the, you know, your 5-game road trip here. But certainly you can't overlook it. I remember, you know, the first year, Joel.
Are you predicting another 9-8?
Yeah, I was going to say,
if you remember that game, Ilya Bryzgalov was in net. I wouldn't expect this to be a 1-0 or 2-0 game. I'd expect there to be you know, 6 or 7 goals at least tomorrow.
Joel, let me before you jump in, you know, as to your point there about the Flyers being, you know, despite their bad defensive numbers, they're still 7-7-3. So the fact that they're 30th, dead last in you know, in goals against, and you know that Steve Mason is the better of the two goalies right now with an 8.84 save percentage tells you that this Flyers team is actually still dangerous, because if their goaltending even improves to a marginal NHL level, you would expect that their record would improve as well.
Yeah, and you want to stay out of the box when you face these guys too. At that power play right now, that's running at what, 27%?
27.4% to be precise.
It makes you wonder what kind of team this is, because last year you touched on that Dave Hakstol coach team. At the beginning of the year, they kind of came out slow. Then to close out the year, 22-12-7, just to make the playoffs, and in that stretch, 933 net mining. So when they entered this year, were they expecting to have the team that we saw at the back half of the season, or maybe go back to what we saw at the beginning of the season? And so far, it's kind of a combination of two. I mean, they've given up 5 goals 5 times already this season, so I'm not sure what to make of this team. Small sample size, but we're already inching closer to that 20-game mark. When do we start saying small sample size when it comes to an 82-game sked? Is it 20 games?
I think 20 games is a quarter. That's a quarter of the season, so if you're not clicking on decent cylinders, not necessarily all cylinders, but if you're not clicking on decent cylinders by the 20-game mark, and I know that U.S. Thanksgiving is the barometer and everything else, you know, if you're not clicking by 20 games, you're going to be in trouble.
I agree with that, but you know, I use the Pittsburgh example.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh looked like they weren't going to make the playoffs. They won the cup. That's one thing. Second thing is, Drew, Boston and Detroit were tied up until game 82 last year, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, it's not like after 20-25 games that, you know, that's where the playoffs are going to be, right?
No, I was just saying, when do we stop saying small sample size?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're 500 after 20 games. Is it still a small sample size and you're trying to break down what this team is? I mean, what the Flyers are, it's exactly what you said. They get the scoring from the exact same guys. Jake Voracek had a terrible year last year. He's back at it this year, putting the puck in the net. The bottom six isn't doing a whole lot, so I think that's where they need to start picking it up. The bottom six, better goaltending, of course, but that sometimes goes hand-in-hand with the guys playing in front of the goaltenders as well.
Yeah, and Joel, I would expect this game to be a little bit of a rough game. You know, we talked about the heavy teams. The Philadelphia Flyers are third in the league in hits. So when you're talking about the Philadelphia Flyers, you're talking about guys like Wayne Simmonds. Mm-hmm. You're talking about guys like Radko Gudas. Braden Schenn has a physical element to his game.
Giroux's no angel either.
Exactly. So, I mean, this Philadelphia Flyers team, they might not play like the Broad Street Bullies of the 1970s, Drew, but, I mean, this is a team that likes the physical element of the game. And we've seen the Jets struggle sometimes against teams like that, St. Louis, L.A. Not that they didn't beat L.A. this year, but the Jets have been more successful, in my opinion, against the more skilled teams like Detroit.
You know, the Jets, when they can get the matchup they want, and, of course, it's a little bit more difficult to get the matchup they want when you're the road team, but the Jets' speed against guys like Radko Gudas on the back end and Mark Streit.
You don't think Sean Couturier is going to be matched up against Mark Scheifele, Drew?
I'm sure he will, and that's going to be a battle going back to the 2011 draft and all the drama that everyone expected that Sean Couturier was going to be the Winnipeg Jets draft pick.
But, yeah, it goes back to excitement outweighs intimidation, though. These young kids on the Jets are so fired up, they don't care who they're playing.
Yep.
They just want to go out there and skate.
Nikolai Ehlers sees Radko Gudas trying to defend him. I mean, that's catnip. I mean, with all due respect to Radko Gudas, who is a fearsome physical defender, he doesn't have the foot speed to keep up with the many of the Winnipeg Jets forwards. So even when they don't get the matchup they want, even when it's a guy like Brandon Tanev, I mean, it's not like Brandon Tanev, you know, has no offensive skill, or Andrew Kopp. We've seen them. They're not offensive juggernauts in the likes of Ehlers or Laine or Scheifele.
But they've all been chipping in.
But they've all been contributing. And when they see a guy like that, you know, who doesn't have good foot speed, and Mark Streit, who's, you know, almost 39 years old, those guys are going to be in tough against some of the Winnipeg Jets' skill players and speed players. Because top to bottom, there's not very many guys that they can sort of relax on who aren't going to be really in their face very quickly because of the speed they bring to the game.
And, Drew, we were at Wells Fargo Center for the 2014 NHL draft, and it seems like every time the Jets go into that building, it's an exciting game, you know. And the Philadelphia Flyers, it doesn't matter if they're a playoff team or a non-playoff team. They're always an exciting team to follow. And you look at this year, Michael Neuwirth was not playing well. And, you know, you wonder if this Philadelphia Flyers team is, if they're still kind of hovering around the playoff line, do they go out and they acquire a goalie? Because right now, Mason and Neuwirth are really struggling. And I realize Anthony Stollers is up there right now.
And
but
worth
still.
Pointing out that both Neuwirth, Mason, and never mind Stollers, but both Neuwirth and Mason are UFAs at season's end.
Yeah.
So this, you know, these guys are auditioning for, you know, another contract.
Ben Bishop might look good in the Flyers jersey there, Drew.
Ben Bishop might look good there. I mean, the Flyers could very, very possibly be a team interested in a goaltender come the new year. I mean, I would not be shocked if Anthony Stollers was to get the start. If not, you know, maybe against the Jets, I don't know enough. They haven't announced who their goalie is going to be. But at this point in time, Mason and Neuwirth aren't getting the job done. We were in position to win last night in Ottawa. I believe it was in Ottawa. Late in the game, Mason gives up a bad goal. Then they lose in a shootout, I believe it was, to the Senators last night.
Yeah, Carlson got
the shootout winner. So this is a Philadelphia team that 7-7-3 is actually pretty good given how terrible their goaltending has been.
Yeah,
I agree.
When we Adam Kimmelman from NHL.com, he covers the Flyers. He's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. When we come back from ESPN.com, Scott Burnside joins us. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour here on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Joel Marcoux with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Scott Burnside. Scott covers the world of the NHL for ESPN.com. Scott, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me aboard.
Our pleasure, Scott. Always appreciate your time. We're going to sort of look around the entire NHL with you, but I want to start with a recent interview you conducted on your podcast, Hockey Today, available on, of course, ESPN.com. You know, you had Mark Scheifele of the Winnipeg Jets on the podcast. I believe it was last week, if I'm not mistaken. You know, from an outsider's point of view, because, you know, we're here in Winnipeg, we're sort of in the eye of the hurricane all the time. From an outsider's point of view, what were your impressions of Mark Scheifele? What have you, when you watch him, what do you see, as he enters, you know, into sort of another echelon and gets the associated attention by entering that other echelon of NHL player?
Well, I mean, I think you've touched on it right there. And there's, you know, a young man who, you know, I think it's interesting, of course, playing with Patrick Laine, and all of the attention surrounding Patrick Laine is the number two draft pick, and his immediate impact on the NHL as a whole and the buzz that sort of surrounds him, and certainly his impact on the Winnipeg Jets. And his path is much different than Mark Scheifele's, right? I mean, even though they are both high-end prospects and early first-round picks, so players who are expected to have sort of a long-lasting impact on the Winnipeg Jets franchise. You know, clearly Mark Scheifele's path to this point is much different. He talked about it during our session on the Hockey Today, the podcast, the fact that getting sent back to junior twice and, you know, having to overcome, you know, I don't think it was criticism necessarily, but I'm sure that he had hoped, and maybe the team had hoped the same, that his evolutionary curve might have been, you know, sort of more dramatic, or might have been, his impact might have been felt more quickly in terms of the NHL club, but it didn't happen that way. But what you see now is, you know, someone who's learned from that, someone who is, it seems very mature, seems to have stepped into a leadership role on a very young, very promising Jets team. You know, had a chance to cover the World Cup of Hockey in Toronto in the fall, and I know people spoke so highly of Mark Scheifele with his role on Team North America. Of course, played with Connor McDavid for most of the tournament and Austin Matthews during parts of it as well. And, you know, with that young team, so dynamic, but, you know, there were young players who were asked to take leadership roles with that team in the tournament, and Mark Scheifele was definitely one of them. So, you know, I think it's great that, you know, he still, it still boggles the mind a little bit for him and maybe for others that he wakes up in the morning and has now for a week or so been the leading scorer in the NHL or tied for the lead as he is now. And that's kind of fun. It's a nice story, and I think it shows that the Jets were wise in their selection of Mark Scheifele, and I think it really does sort of speak to, you know, sort of the world is his oyster kind of thing. He's a guy that really, I think the sky's the limit for him, and it bodes well for the rest of the season. I know we talked about it on our podcast, you know, whether the Jets were a legitimate playoff team, and there seemed to be general consensus in our group that they are, and that's pretty exciting, especially after a little bit of a rocky start to the season.
Scott, I don't know if we're going to start having to call Wednesday, November 16th, National Injury Day in the NHL, but it seemed like, you know, it was the news kept coming as far as the injuries to players. Steven Stamkos has got that meniscus tear. The Tampa Bay Lightning announced that he's out indefinitely. Taylor Hall of the New Jersey Devils, who's been such a bright spot for them. The Devils are playing great right now. You know, he had knee surgery. Johnny Gaudreau might have to have surgery on his finger. He's going to be out indefinitely. And, you know, I'm missing some injuries there. But which one of those injuries to you do you think is the most concerning?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we talked about it this morning. And really, you know, you go around the NHL, you know, Andrei Kopitar has been out. It's more day-to-day, I believe, for Kopitar and the LA Kings. Ryan O'Reilly has missed time. Of course, Jack Eichel missing the entire season so far for Buffalo. Evander Kane missed time for the Sabres as well. And you're right, you go around the NHL, even, you know, look at the goaltending. Pekka Rinne missed last night's horrific loss to the Leafs. Jonathan Quick has been out since the World Cup of Hockey. So, you know, a lot of marquee players have missed a lot of time. And it really does, you know, it's the old cliche. I mean, when these things happen, it does two things. It tests the team's depth, and that goes without saying. And so all of those teams, you know, New Jersey's off to just such a tremendous start, and you feel badly for John Hines and that group there, because Taylor Hall really has been a spark plug to a team that has, you know, been one of the surprise teams in the Eastern Conference. So how do they overcome that? That's a difficult question. I don't know whether they can. Tampa, for me, is a team. A, they're used to playing without Steven Stamkos. It's not something they want to get into too much of a habit of, but you look at the blood clotting issue that cost him time at the end of the regular season and all but one of their playoff games as the Bolts went to the Eastern Conference Final Game 7 against Pittsburgh last year, and they soldiered on. They're very deep. They're very talented. I would expect that this is going to open a door. Andre Palat hasn't had a very good start for the Lightning. Alex Killorn's another guy who needs to step into the breach there, but this is a team that I think is built to overcome those kinds of injuries. There aren't many teams in the NHL you can say that about. Calgary, oh my goodness, you know, off to a horrific start to begin with. And then you have Johnny Gaudreau, one of the two young kids who signed the big contract extension coming into the season. The team has been miserable on both sides of the puck. And to miss Johnny Gaudreau now for a long period of time, it's really going to test the mettle of that team. Now, I did see several people notice today, or remind people that, you know, a couple of years ago when Captain Marc Giordano went down with a torn biceps muscle, everyone predicted that the Flames would fall completely off the map, and they didn't. Of course, they made the playoffs and won a playoff round against Vancouver. I think that's too tall an order. I don't think that team is. I just don't think that they're ready. They haven't bounced back the way that I think a lot of people felt they would. And the loss of Johnny Gaudreau, I think, is only going to make matters worse in Calgary.
You touched on the Flames there. What the heck's going on with these Dougie Hamilton rumors?
Well, there's a guy. I mean, you know, at the time of the deal at the draft a couple of years back, you know, people felt that the Calgary Flames had committed larceny by getting Dougie Hamilton out of Boston and then, you know, signing him at the time he was a restricted free agent. And the future looks so bright, you know, with a team that was, you know, coming off an unexpected playoff run and Bob Hartley winning the Jack Adams and an absolute landslide and all the good things that were happening there. And, you know, they just have not been able to follow up on that. I mean, Winnipeg's, you know, the fans in Winnipeg are familiar with that, where you have that step forward, and sometimes it's followed by one or two steps backward. But this is a team that, you know, there's no question that Dougie Hamilton has not evolved into the player they felt that they were getting when they got him from Boston. And it goes back, you know, maybe the Bruins weren't so lame as they were made out to be at the time of the deal. I mean, maybe they saw something, a number of red flags in terms of whether it's Dougie Hamilton's, you know, his game or his preparation or whatever it is, that they weren't ready to commit to Dougie Hamilton in the way that Calgary did. And now, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that Calgary is disappointed in what has happened with Dougie Hamilton. But, you know, the thing you always have to be cautious about with young defensemen is to make those snap judgments. I mean, young defensemen sometimes take until their mid to late 20s before they finally, you know, they finally get it. And, you know, I think of Victor Hedman in Tampa, and when he was the number two overall pick, and it took a long time, it took 4 or 5 years, and people were saying, geez, what a, you know, he's an okay defenseman, and, you know, but just sort of blah. It was sort of, you know, what a kind of a waste. And yet, you know, is there anyone who doesn't think that Victor Hedman is among the top 4 or 5 defensemen in the NHL right now, and is a player that could very well, he's already led his team deep into the playoffs to a Stanley Cup Finals, and could do so again in the spring. So I think you have to be patient, but I can understand why patience may be wearing more than a little thin in Calgary.
Well, if he's an average defenseman, they can probably trade him to Edmonton for one of their superstars.
Wow.
Sorry.
Now that's a shot. Now, yeah, I know. It's why I was in Pittsburgh for the Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby clash a week ago. I guess it was a week ago last night. And, you know, the Oilers ended up losing that game, but it was terrific. It was terrific hockey. Connor McDavid with 3 assists. And I remember writing after, you know, and talking to some scouts and people who felt that the Oilers really had turned a corner, and instead they've turned the other corner and disappeared completely from sight. So it's going to be fascinating to see whether the Oilers can sort of, you know, they had such good press through the, you know, whatever, first 6 weeks of the regular season, and they looked good, and they did things that they hadn't done before in terms of their positional play and their goaltending and playing well on the road and all those kinds of things. Those things seem to have been forgotten now, and it's going to be interesting to see how Todd McLaughlin handles it and how that team handles, you know, what is their first significant adversity in a season that began with such tremendous promise for them.
Scott Burnside's our guest on NHL This Week. Scott covers the NHL for ESPN.com.
Scott, this whole NHL to the Olympics mess, Rene Fasel, of course, says, we have the money to alleviate the costs, to which Gary Bettman replies, that's not necessary. Safe to say the commish isn't being altruistic, but just flat out does not want to go?
Well, I think there is some of that. But I think the NHL is, you know, they are trying to leverage as much as they possibly can, you know, from the situation. Now, you know, initially, I think we all extrapolated this. I'm not sure that either Gary Bettman or Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly said it's quite it's just black and white. If someone comes up with the cash, we will go to South Korea. Certainly, the feeling was that the IOC wouldn't deliver the cash, and whether it's, you know, $14 to $20 million, depending on the totals, and but in terms of ensuring player contracts, travel expenses, all the things to get the NHL to the Olympics and make sure people are comfortable there. The IOC wasn't going to do it. Rene Fasel with the IIHF feels he's got money. I think the NHL feels on some level that it shouldn't be coming out of anyone's hockey budget. You know, is that money that could be going from the IIHF to support and grow the game in any number of hockey playing nations around the world? I think the answer is probably yes. Is it important for the IOC and for NBC and for the Olympics as a whole to have the NHL players in South Korea? I think it's pivotal. Now, if you're the NHL, do you think you can leverage an extra 3 years in the current CBA, which is certainly something that the league apparently has floated with the players, saying, listen, we'll agree to go if you'll agree to extend the CBA by 3 years. If you're the league, why not try and do that? You know, the bottom line is, you know, where is the line in the sand, and what does it represent for the league? Are they prepared to say to the players, if you don't give us a 3-year extension on the CBA, we're done with the Olympics? My guess is they wouldn't take that hard line. That's just a guess on my part. Certainly the owner's position remains very clear. A lot of them don't like the Olympics. They don't see any quantitative value in being there, or certainly none that justifies closing down the league for 3 weeks to go where games are not played in prime time and the risk of injury is significant, all those things. But we also know that the players love it, and I think there is intrinsic value in being at the Olympics. I think the NHL misses an incredible opportunity, even if you can't quantify it in terms of dollars and cents and TV ratings and all those things. I think they miss a tremendous opportunity to share the game with the world if they bow out of the Olympics. So, you know, we're getting close. By sometime early in 2017, we're going to have an answer. Member hockey nations like Canada, the United States, Hockey Canada, USA Hockey, the Finns, the Swedes, the Czechs, they're all going to have to make contingency plans if the NHL isn't going to go to South Korea in 2018. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I hope the NHL is there. I think the game is poorer if the NHL ends their relationship with the Olympics, but it's a pretty complex issue, and it's going to be there will be some interesting discussion and negotiation on all kinds of fronts before that decision is finally made.
Scott Burnside's our guest. He covers the NHL for ESPN.com. Scott, the GMs got together in Toronto yesterday for a quick one-day meeting. Rule 48 was a subject matter after, you know, Nazem Kadri's hit on Daniel Sedin a couple weeks ago. Besides NHL general managers, do you know anybody who likes that kind of hit in hockey?
Yeah, I don't know, and I know for a fact that a lot of GMs don't like it. And I mean, I sort of understand this notion of, you know, wanting very much to preserve the physicality of the game, I'm looking for the right word that won't make me sound archaic, but, you know, the penalty that players pay if they don't pay attention and if they are careless with their positioning and if players are careless in how they pass the puck to their teammates. I think those things are important. But I also think that the game has changed so dramatically and it's so much faster. The players are so much bigger, and I don't think there's a place for those kinds of blindside hits. And in fact, I thought, you know, I like when the rule first came in, and I loved the idea that this was, you know, specifically to take a blindside, that there was a specific reference to the blindside, unsuspecting players. I think that the game has to protect those players. I understand that, you know, the sort of at the heart of hearts, you say, well, you know, players need to look after themselves. And I agree to a certain degree that is true. Players have to be responsible for where they are on the ice and what opposing players are doing or potentially doing to them. But those hits to the head, the blindside hits, with what we know now about concussions and what we continue to learn about them, I think that you have to err on the side of caution. And I think there are a lot of GMs who believe that. It will be interesting in March when they gather again to see, you know, if they're, you know, what kind of steps are taken forward, if there's going to be a refinement of Rule 48, or just which direction we go on it. But to answer your question on the basic level, I don't think there are many people around the game, including a lot of GMs, who believe that that's the kind of hit that we want to see on any kind of basis, on any kind of regular basis.
Scott, on Monday, Seattle Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson basically blew up Twitter saying that he was excited to announce that he was partnering up with Chris Hansen and the Sonics Arena Group, hoping to bring the NBA and the NHL to Seattle. And then on Tuesday, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman was downplaying this tweet and that news and basically saying until they have an arena there, he didn't really want to talk about it. Do you think that Seattle changes anything? Do you think that Quebec City is still the front runner to get the next NHL expansion team? What did you make of Russell Wilson's tweet?
Yeah, I think for the league, it's probably a year and a half too late, or whenever the expansion process was opened up, and it was only Quebec City and Las Vegas that ponied up the money, some of which was non-refundable. And I think there was a huge opportunity lost for the city of Seattle. Now, you know, whether it was the Hansen Group or any other group that had hoped to bring hockey, NHL hockey, to Seattle, that was an opportunity missed. I think the NHL is, you know, even quietly, you know, sure, in a perfect world, would the NHL like to have a franchise in Seattle and balance out the current alignment, have 16 in the West and 16 in the East? I think, yeah, the answer is yes, they would. We're a long way. There's so many million miles to travel between a tweet from an NFL quarterback, even one profile Russell Wilson to an actual shovel in the ground, an actual arena in which the NHL could play its games in Seattle. And we know from around the NHL, we know the process in Vegas, that, you know, how painstaking it was. We know the patience that Quebec City has had to provide in waiting their turn. We certainly know the ups and downs, and more downs than ups in Arizona, with the Coyotes trying to find a suitable home in the desert. It looks like they may have one now in Tempe. So I'm not surprised that the commissioner has sort of downplayed this. At the risk of providing a cliche, that, you know, the talk is cheap. And until there is actual walls around an arena, I don't think that we're any closer to seeing NHL hockey in Seattle, regardless of what, appears on social media.
Fortunately, the Cleveland Browns don't have a quarterback to tweet anything along those lines. Otherwise, we'd be talking about expansion to Cleveland. Scott Burnside covers the NHL for ESPN.com. Scott, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for jumping on with us.
Yep, anytime, guys.
Take care, Scott. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll touch on the NHL's general manager's meetings. And I think we might have a second or two to discuss Kate Upton's latest tweet. You're listening to the NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly before 7 in the evening, big thanks to Scott Burnside of ESPN.com for joining us. Coming up at the top of the hour, Adam Kimmelman of NHL.com joins us. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, Drew, we were talking a little NFL there with Scott Burnside, mostly NHL, but, you know, when it comes to Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I managed to take shots at both the Oilers management and the Cleveland Browns, so yep. I considered it a good segment.
You know, speaking of the NFL, though, just as an aside, I know you want to get into the GM meetings here.
I really want to get into the Kate Upton tweet, but you can go ahead.
We can get into that. What did you think of that Tony Romo press conference yesterday? To me, that was very bizarre.
I thought that it was a very classy move by him, but he sort of everybody knows that he's not going, that the way Dak Prescott has played for the Cowboys, that Prescott deserves the starting quarterback job. But Romo comes out and he looks like the consummate teammate. I'm going to support him. Look how great he's playing. This is difficult for me emotionally, but I can't expect to get my job back based on how fantastic this, Prescott's performance is. I don't expect that this is the end of Tony Romo as a Dallas Cowboys quarterback, certainly for this season.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Why couldn't he have said that to the team in the dressing room behind closed doors? It was almost like it was like a retirement speech, but he wasn't retiring.
Well, he's getting asked about it nonstop. He's healthy now for the first time really all season. He's going to be active as their backup quarterback when they play the Ravens on Sunday. So I think it's a great opportunity for him to come out, quash any talk about a quarterback controversy. He looks like a knight in shining armor as the consummate teammate. Prescott knows that Romo has his back. And if you remember back to when Brady took over from Bledsoe back in 2001, if you remember there, Bledsoe
gets
injured.
Was there a press conference like that?
There wasn't a press conference like that, but Bledsoe gets injured. Brady comes in. He's the hero. He gets them all the way to the AFC Championship game in Pittsburgh, and then he gets injured in that game. And Bledsoe comes off the bench for the first time since he was injured. I believe it was week 4 when he had the chest injury.
How do you remember that?
I have a savant-like memory for NFL news. And Bledsoe goes into Pittsburgh and leads the Patriots to the Super Bowl, where, of course, Brady ends up playing, beating the Rams, and starting the Patriots dynasty. But don't be surprised if Tony Romo has to come off the bench at some point in time, be it an injury, be it Prescott struggling, whatever it might be. And so I think it's just a good way for the Cowboys to demonstrate they're all on the same page.
Well, you're the NFL guy. I just wanted to know what you had to say about it, because I thought it was, you don't see that every day where a guy mid-season when the team's doing really well has to address that.
It's just because he was healthy for the first time.
I agree, though. It was classy.
It was classy. Yeah. Quickly on the Kate Upton thing. So Kate Upton, her boyfriend is Justin Verlander of the Detroit Tigers. And the voting on the AL Cy Young just came out about an hour ago or so, and Verlander lost a very narrow vote to Rick Porcello of the Boston Red Sox. It was the closest vote since 1970. There were three voters for the Cy Young Award who didn't have Verlander on their ballot. They didn't rank him 1, 2, or 3, and that's what tipped the balance for Rick Porcello to win. This is a tweet that Kate Upton sent out 1 hour ago. Hey, at MLB, I thought I was the only person allowed to bleep Justin Verlander. What two writers didn't have him on their ballot? So Kate Upton standing by her man in some vulgar language, but I guess loyalty between Romo and the Cowboys and loyalty between Kate Upton and Justin Verlander is not in short supply tonight.
I'm just glad that Drew bleeped that one out.
That's an MVP tweet right there. Who needs a Cy Young trophy when you have that to go home to?
That's true. You got Kate Upton standing by you, and you get to go home to Kate Upton. Yeah. So it's a good double whammy there for Justin Verlander. Quickly on the NHL general managers meetings,
yep.
The three topics were about sort of preventing any shenanigans regarding the expansion draft.
Yeah.
And then Rule 48, where they, of course, continued to decide nothing.
Right.
And then finally, a proposal, didn't really go anywhere yet, going to be tabled for later on the next general manager's meetings, about a change to the shootout where the same shooter can shoot multiple times after the first three rounds are over.
Yeah, they also got into the goalie equipment, but I'll let Joel get in there first.
I like the shootout one, and the Jonathan Toews, TJ Oshie rule for sure. Maybe get rid of the Merrick Malik moments, and now if you go to round 18, you can see the same guys, which is ultimately, I guess, what the fans want to see. The one that's interesting to me, though, is the expansion draft one. Vegas, of course, gets that 48-hour window to try to flirt with some players from other teams, free agents, of course, to try to sign them. Now some GMs are a little apprehensive that George McPhee will talk to a player, handshake, wink, wink, but won't announce the signing until July 1st. In the meantime, he'll go pluck a player from your team, but the rule is if he signs your guy, you're now exempt from having a player plucked from your team.
Yep.
On the other side, now George McPhee is a little rattled that some teams are going to have a UFA that they won't sign until or announce the signing until July 1st so that they won't have to protect that player. If you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. He's sort of saying you're putting me in an impossible situation. If I talk to a guy and then I sign him after July 1st, they're all going to scream collusion when actually it might just be part of the contract negotiation or part of the trying to woo a free agent. These general managers, the NHL is such a small, close-knit community. I think if they know when there's malfeasance afoot. And so paper trail. I mean, somehow it all – remember back in the day when the Minnesota Timberwolves signed – oh, gosh, who was the forward they signed? I can't remember.
Are we trying to cover every sport here?
And one segment, apparently. I'm trying to remember who the forward they signed was, but they did it in a way that subverted the salary cap. You know, and they cheated. Like they said, you know, we'll sign you to a 1-year deal and then we'll extend you to a 4-year deal. And they got their hands slapped by the NBA. So these things where you collude, they always tend to come out and you always find, they always end up getting punished, I find. So I wouldn't think that George McPhee or the Las Vegas Brain Trust this early on in their stint as an NHL owner are going to want to thumb their nose at the NHL too badly.
No, but it goes the other way around. Let's say you're a team and you have a bunch of free agents, plus you have a bunch of players that you want to protect, and you kind of already know that you're going to sign that player, but you don't announce it until after July 1st so that you don't have to protect that player. You could easily have signed him on, you know, June 20th or whatever it is, but you don't. Because you don't want to protect him, and that's where George McPhee is coming in now, saying, "Well, what if teams are doing this?" And I don't know.
The problem was
Joe Smith?
It was Joe Smith. Thank you, Ezzy. How did you remember that, or did you look it up?
I looked it up.
Attaboy, but I appreciate you looking it up that quickly for me, Joe Smith. Thank you very much, Ezzy. Let's head to break. Adam Kimmelman covers the Flyers. He's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number two of NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Joel Marcoux with you on this Wednesday night. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Adam Kimmelman of NHL.com. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers for that fine website. Adam, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. Adam, the Flyers 7-7-3 through their first 17 games. You know, you can say that's either a 500 points percentage, which it is, but it's a little bit below 500 in terms of a winning percentage. You look at the defense, though, atrocious. You look at the goal scoring, impressive. How would you classify the first, you know, 17 games of the Philadelphia Flyers season thus far?
I think you could really say inconsistent would probably be the best word to use to describe it. You know, like you said, the offense has been there. They're averaging, you know, 3.5 goals per game, which is great. The defense and the goaltending has been a struggle. There have been nights where it's been good. There have been too many nights where it's been sketchy and inconsistent. You know, both the sixth defenseman and the goaltender, you know, there have been nights where some have put one group has played well and the other hasn't. You know, everybody wants to point fingers at the goaltending. They look at the, you know, Steve Mason and his sub 900 save percentage. I think Mason, the last game in two periods, has played well, probably the best he's played all season. I think the defense still had some struggles in its own zone. They struggle against bigger, stronger forwards because it's not a physically imposing group, maybe with the exception of Radko Gudas. But, you know, they need to get better, especially the closer you get to the goal, clearing out the crease, clearing rebounds, not allowing second and third chance opportunities. It's something they really have to focus on, I think.
Adam, when the Flyers fans, I think, you know, several years down the road, look back at that 2015 draft, which saw the Flyers draft Travis Konechny and Ivan Provorov in the first round, they might look at that draft as being a turning point for this franchise. And both players are in the lineup right now. Travis Konechny has got 4 goals and 10 points, playing on that second line with Sean Couturier and Jacob Voracek. How would you rate his play thus far in the season?
I think Konechny's been very good, and I think he's trending exactly the way you want him to be trending. Every game he seems to be a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more willing to try things offensively. There's certainly no fear in his game. That's something that's really stood out almost since day one. You know, and you saw it a little bit last night against Ottawa. He took a hard hit and got up and went after the closest Ottawa player and put a good lick on him before he went off to the end of the shift. So there's no fear in his game. He goes to the net. He can score those dirty goals. He's talented enough to stick handle anywhere on the ice, skate his way in and out of trouble, in and out of the areas he needs to get to. And, you know, having two real good veterans like Sean Couturier and Jake Voracek on that line with him, it's allowed him to flourish and play his game. You know, Dave Hakstol has shuffled around the other three lines this season, but that line, Konechny, Couturier, and Voracek, has been pretty much intact throughout the first 15, 16 games of the season, and Konechny's strong play as a 19-year-old is a huge reason why.
A lot of the same pieces are back from last season. Now, entering the season, the thought was this would be a good thing or a bad thing. So far, which side are you on, and could some changes be coming at some point during the season?
Well, you know, I think entering the season, everyone was sort of in agreement that the defense, again, would be a struggle. You know, there was hope that Ivan Provorov would be able to add some depth and some quality play to that group, but again, he's only 19 and he has played well, but his learning curve is a little bit of a steep one. You know, I think everybody expected the goaltending to be better than it has been. You know, Steve Mason and Michael Nybert have taken a lot of flack over the years, and some rightfully so, but I think, you know, on paper last year, if you look at the numbers, they both had very good seasons. I think Nybert was fourth in the league in save percentage among goalies to play at least 25 games. Mason was very good at even strength. This year, for whatever reason, it hasn't quite been there amongst the two goaltenders. So, you know, I think changes on – it's going to be hard to do. Both goalies are unrestricted free agents after the season. They're going to have to make a decision there. On defense, you know, the kind of player that they need on defense – is going to cost them some of their really good young prospects. And we talked about Konechny and Provorov, and they have a real good one playing in the American League named Travis Sanheim, who is trending towards being a real good NHL defenseman at one point in the next season or two. So, you know, they have a real good group of talented young prospects coming through the system. To get the kind of defense that they need would cost those players, as well as salary cap space, also something which is in very short supply there in Philadelphia. So I don't know if there's going to be any huge market changes. I could see maybe them shuffling the deck a little bit in a third pair, second pair guy, but I don't think they're going to get that franchise caliber defenseman that, you know, they seem to need right now.
Adam Kimmelman, our guest on NHL This Week. Adam covers the Philadelphia Flyers for NHL.com. The Jets and the Flyers, of course, tomorrow evening from the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia. Adam, Dale Weiss was brought in the offseason on a four-year deal, getting paid a little bit over $2.3 million per season, struggling to start the year with only 2 points in 13 games. Is it as bad as the numbers indicate, or is there maybe more to the story that the raw statistics aren't showing with regard to Dale Weiss in his first 20 or so games with the Philadelphia Flyers?
You know, it's been a little bit of a puzzling start for him. Not quite sure why he hasn't been able to produce. He's healthy. You know, he looks like the Chicago Dale Weiss, which was, you know, a guy who went 19 games without a goal there, including the playoffs, versus the Montreal Dale Weiss, who's a very productive player. He's not getting any power play time in Philadelphia, and some of that is because the four that are on that unit ahead of him have outplayed him, and he hasn't produced enough to earn a spot on that power play. He's been consistently in the bottom two forward lines. He's been a healthy scratch once this season, maybe twice. You know, I think it's a question of him still trying to figure out his role and how, you know, find some chemistry with his line mates and kind of figure out how he's supposed to play in this group. I think there's a lot of talent there. I think there could be some improved play there, but definitely the Flyers would love to see him step up and add a little bit more because, you know, they have two good lines going right now. They'd love to add a third and just kind of ease some of that burden on the defense by keeping the puck longer in the offensive zone. Dale's a big, strong guy capable of, you know, good puck position, good puck possession and holding the puck in the offensive zone and creating scoring chances. You know, he hasn't quite done it yet, but there's certainly faith that it's going to come at some point.
Adam, we talked about Ivan Provorov earlier, and I wanted to ask you about Shane Gostisbehere. He surprised many people by being a Calder Trophy finalist last year, put up 17 goals, 46 points in 64 games. Have you noticed any change in his game this season?
I think it's not so much that Gostisbehere has changed his game. I think teams are playing him differently, and it's something that he talked about, you know, at the end of last season, how teams had really, you know, were playing him differently the last 30 games of the season versus the first 30 games when he first came up. And it's sort of the way things work now. You know, there's so much pre-scouting, so much video work. You know, teams will, you know, you'll go through the league once and you can maybe get away with things and do things. But when you start seeing teams a second time, a third time, teams are going to know where you like the puck, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, and they're going to take advantage of things that they see in your game that can be taken advantage of. And it's up to that player to adjust and find new ways to be productive and do the things that make him successful. I think Shane's in that phase where he's still trying to figure out, you know, if this is my move and everybody knows I'm going to make this move, how do I figure out a different move or a different way to create the space that I need to make that move? So I think he's in that learning space right now. And I think, you know, you see flashes of it. I don't think anyone really expected him to have, you know, that 17 goal, you know, be almost a 20 goal scorer again this season. But I think he there's some areas in his game that he needs to clean up, especially on the defensive side. And I think it's just about, you know, learning and adjusting to what teams are throwing at him. I think he'll get there. He's a bright player, got a lot of talent, and the Flyers are certainly going to give him the ice time to make whatever adjustments he needs.
Adam, getting away from the Flyers on the ice and getting to a Flyer who was just inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, you brought back a piece that you'd written in 2012. You did an oral history of the Eric Lindros trade and how that shook the foundations of the NHL. What was it like for you to watch Eric Lindros on Monday bring his brother Brett up for his Hall of Fame induction ceremony and you know, just talk about what it was like during the process of writing that four-part series about Eric Lindros and his career and that trade that sent him from Quebec to Philly?
Well, I think to everybody, you know, there weren't too many dry eyes when Eric pulled his brother up on stage. And he said it, you know, Brett wanted to be a full-time, you know, a productive NHL player, and unfortunately he had the same kind of concussion issues that Eric had, but it was so nice to see them share that moment together, and it was a fun little way to encapsulate Eric in his career and to share that moment with his brother. And as far as the story goes, it was really interesting just to hear some of the anecdotes from the people who kind of went through it. There was so much, you know, unknown and question there, you know, what was Quebec doing? What was their thought process? Marcel Aubu and Pierre Pagé, and how are they trying to do it? And Neil Smith called it an auction, and you know, how they would shuttle different teams in and out of their hotel suite in Montreal to kind of, you know, see who could give them the best offer. And from speaking to Russ Farwell, who was the Flyers general manager at the time, and Neil Smith, who was the Rangers general manager, it seemed like the $15 million was always a big part of the deal, and then it was up to the GM to sort of put together whatever hockey-type package of players and picks and prospects that could convince Quebec to make the move. And it ultimately came down to, you know, when the Flyers put Peter Forsberg in the trade, you know, not thinking Forsberg would ever come over from Sweden at that time, that was the sweetener that Quebec needed to accept the Flyers package. So, and Russ Farwell told me that if Forsberg had come over a year earlier, they would have never made that trade. But once they put forward, but they had a real concern that Forsberg was going to stay over in Sweden, you know, make a career for himself over there, and they would have wasted the draft pick. But here was a chance to get Eric Lindros, and they couldn't really pass it up.
Adam Kimmelman covers the Philadelphia Flyers for NHL.com. Adam, really appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Anytime, guys.
Take care, Adam. Good question there, Ezzy, about Eric Lindros and the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, if you haven't read Adam's piece,
it's a great piece.
It's on NHL.com. Yeah. You know, you can follow him on on Twitter at NHL Adam K. And it's a great piece because it talks to, or I should say, Adam talked to, and it references all the key players that were involved in that trade. So it's a really great four-part series.
And it certainly segues nice into our next segment. Before, you know, you asked him about the current Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony. We talk about the potential class of 2017 coming up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Big thank you to Adam Kimmelman. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers for NHL.com. Before him, Scott Burnside of ESPN.com joined us. In case you missed either of those interviews, easiest way to get the show, go to iTunes, subscribe, get it sent to your iPod automatically each and every week. That way you never miss an episode of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show or tonight's NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. It certainly was a poignant and touching moment Monday night in Toronto at the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony when Eric Lindros brought Brett Lindros up on stage to share in the celebration and the joyous nature of the event. So that was a very touching moment. But as quickly as we forget about the 2016 Hockey Hall of Fame class, we look ahead to the 2017 Hockey Hall of Fame class. And one name at the forefront of the class, I think it's unanimous in this room, Timu Solani, a clear-cut first ballot NHL Hockey Hall of Famer, no question about it for anybody here.
Yeah, I think, guys, if you don't have Timu going in to the Hockey Hall of Fame next year, you have to give your head a shake. I mean, he's one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. And, you know, we're talking about Winnipeg here on a Winnipeg radio station, so I don't think you're going to get any arguments in this city, Drew. But I think when you're talking about hockey writers, I think everybody's going to put Timu into the Hall of Fame first ballot, similar to Jaromir Jagr. When he's eligible to go in, he's going to go in. So I think that there's no doubt that he's the first guy that they're going to check off of the list.
Yeah, 684 goals, 1,457 points in 1,451 games. 11th all-time in goals, 15th in points, 24th in games played for the Finnish Flash.
I think you could argue that he's the best European player of all time.
Well, he'll be the second Finnish player into the Hall of Fame. Of course, Jari Kurri, first inducted in 2001. So Timu would join him as the second Finnish Hall of Famer.
I think it's between Kurri, Solani, and Jagr there.
for the best European of all time. But certainly, those would be three very good candidates. Other candidates for the Hockey Hall of Fame. You guys had homework coming into the show to give a list or the other names you think that are likely to be called and inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. We'll start with you, Joel. Give me one name that you have on your list, and we can bandy that about a little bit.
Well, it's not necessarily on my list of do I think he will or should get in, but I'm going to throw out Dave Andrechuk. I mean, you want to talk about goals, 640 goals. Only a dozen guys have more goals than he does. You want to talk about longevity? Mark Recchi, I know he's one of your guys. He's got the long career. Dave Andrechuk, I mean, had a lengthy career. And what are we talking about? I mean, the problem with this Hockey Hall of Fame is how they do their inductions. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if you're not a first ballot Hall of Famer, you're not a Hall of Famer.
Well, so hang on. Let me interrupt you there. To your point, though, talking about Dave Andrechuk, this would be his ninth year of eligibility.
Right. No, I agree with that. But I'm saying they should almost rejig it to the point where if you have 12 guys going in one year or just two guys, if you're not a first ballot Hall of Famer, are you a Hall of Famer?
Well, but that's true in all sports. We see baseball, lots of guys don't get into their final
years. There's more transparency in baseball, though.
Tim Raines this year, this is his final year.
There's more transparency in baseball. Hockey, it's these backslappers who, they have zero accountability. You just touched on Eric Lindros getting in. Nobody would ever answer the question, why is he not getting in?
Sure, because it took him a number of years before he finally got the award.
They would always just dodge it. You know, back in 2010, Pat Burns passes away. Mm-hmm. In 2011, for the first time in 20 years, they don't even induct a builder. And then when they were asked, why did you not induct Pat Burns? He just passed away. He's clearly a Hall of Famer. Three-time Jack Adams Award winner. Nobody's ever done that.
They don't.
And they had no answer.
Your problem is, and you're 100% correct, is that they don't publish their ballots. They don't say the following people voted for yay for this player or nay for that player. Yeah. It is completely a secret ballot with no transparency. Yeah, it definitely is an old boys club. And I think you're bang on with your comments regarding the process and the making of the sausage. But once the sausage is made, Ezzy, next year for the 2017 Hockey Hall of Fame, do you have, as Joel said, do you have a guy like Dave Andrechuk in as a Hall of Famer?
By the way, Drew, if you didn't bring sausage, I'm going to be very upset.
I have no sausage at all.
To be clear, I knew what Ezzy's picks were coming into this, I agreed with every single one of them. Yeah. So I was just tossing out other names just to... Is Dave Andrechuk going to go in next year? I have no idea.
And I think next year, Joel, it's going to be between Recchi and Andrechuk. And I think Dave Andrechuk deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, absolutely. Finally got his cup in 2004 with the Tampa Bay Lightning alongside guys like LeCavalier, Richard, St. Louis. I have Recchi going in, and for me, you know, Mark Recchi, people forget, he won three Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
So this guy was a winner. This guy was playing into his early 40s. Mm-hmm. Drew, you're talking about a guy that played 1,652 games and put up 577 goals and 1,533 points. Now, as far as I'm concerned, and I realize that, you know, people have a problem with some of these guys going in. As far as I'm concerned, guys that played that long, longevity counts, winning counts. Well, Mark Recchi was a really good player for a really long time, similar to a Mike Gartner.
Let me stop you right there, because you just said longevity counts.
Yep.
I think in a lot of these instances, longevity hurts a lot of these guys. Mark Recchi, I think, is hurt by the longevity.
Because of their points per game, or what?
Because of if you look at his points on a points per game.
Yeah,
and you take a guy like Dave Andrechuk, who also played, you know, 1,639 games in the NHL.
Drew,
to get his 640 goals.
Mm-hmm. Mark Recchi had 300-point seasons with the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Philadelphia Flyers. Two with the Flyers, one with the Penguins. And even to his later years with the Flyers, you know, he had a 91-point season, 77-point season, 75-point season. Even, you know, into his mid-30s. 30s was putting up 68 points with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I think he's a Hall of Famer, absolutely. And, you know, I agree with Joel. Andrechuk will probably get in as well. But if we're talking about, you know, Recchi or Andrechuk versus Jeremy Roenick, for example, I don't think Jeremy Roenick is a Hall of Famer. With all due respect to Jeremy Roenick, I really like him. I think he does a great job in the media. But to me, Recchi and Andrechuk should go in ahead of Roenick.
Well, what defines that? The problem is because what I was saying earlier, how – to me, if you're not a first ballot Hall of Famer, you're not a Hall of Famer, because now we have to slice and dice these names that have been lingering for 10 years. And so what is a Hall of Famer? If Jeremy Roenick, let's say make the case for him. He's what, one of the highest scoring Americans of all time, if not the highest scoring American?
How many Stanley Cups did he win, though?
Zero.
Agree, but that's the thing. So now it goes back to winning. And you still have to, you know, Marcel Dion, zero Stanley Cups, 700 goals.
Yep.
You know, Michel Goulet, zero Stanley Cups. There's still some guys who have Stanley Cups. I'm not comparing the two. But everybody seems to have their own opinion
yep.
of who's a Hall of Famer, right? So even going into next year, you know, another contentious name that I was talking about with somebody, Chris Osgood.
Chris Osgood's not a Hall of Famer. Okay. I mean, I agree. I know the argument you're going to make.
No, no, I'm not making the argument for yeah. him. I'm just saying.
No, you know that the argument that can be made. Sorry,
yeah, it can be made. You know, two cups as a starter.
I think there's a smell test that has to be passed.
There is.
You know, when you were watching these guys play, you know, when you either watched them on TV or you had the opportunity to watch them, you know, to watch them live if they came through the through the Winnipeg Arena back in the day. Did you ever think to yourself you were watching, if not a Hall of Famer, but were you watching a dominant player? Were you watching a special player?
Right.
You watch Dave Andrechek, you never thought, I'm watching a special player.
Sure. Which, again, goes back to if you're not a first ballot Hall of Famer, are you really a Hall of Famer?
Well, you know, Alex McGillney.
You need to turn the needle right away.
He should be in the Hall of Fame.
Alex McGillney, you know, he has over a point a game. He played 990 NHL games. He had 1,032 points in those 990 games.
Yep.
That was a guy who, when he was at his peak.
Yep.
76 goals
the same year as Timu. You know, they tied for the lead, league lead in goals that
year.
Won
a cup with the Devils.
Won a cup with the Devils. That was a guy, when you watched Alex McGillney, you thought you were watching someone special.
Agreed.
I agree.
Joel, so Joel, just to recap, though, you've got Solani, Recchi, Andrechek?
Yes. I was making the case because I also have, I'm mentioning the players that are going to be in the category of going in. Andrechek, I've got him going in. But I'm also on the fence on a guy like Theo Fleury, too.
Right.
But
that's who I had.
I was just trying to bring up some different names instead of, you know, so we...
Well, Theo Fleury's an interesting case. This is his ninth year. He's a point-per-game guy.
Yep.
He had 1,088 points in 1,084 games. To me, that's a benchmark.
Right.
To me, that point-per-game player is a benchmark. And it's almost more of a benchmark than the 600-goal total, which, you know, was previously, you know, if you hit 600 goals, you were automatically in. Andrechek is the only guy who's hit 600 goals who isn't in the Hall of Fame.
I think Theo Fleury should be in, guys, and I think you have to factor in what he's gone through. We've had Theo Fleury on the show a couple times. Hopefully we can get him on here. You know, this guy went through a lot in his life, and he ended up winning a Stanley Cup early in his career in 1989, mm-hmm. wins an Olympic gold in 2002, yeah. plays an integral role, leadership role on that team, and he put up some points. This guy, to me, set the tone for a lot of smaller players, the Brian Giontas, the Tyler Johnsons, the Nick Petans. Fleury's got to be in there, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, the numbers are there, Drew. 1,088 points in 1,084 games. Let's not forget his 74-point season with the Belfast Giants, by the way. So, I mean, I think Theo, because of his international experience, you know, at the World Juniors and at the Olympics, and what he did with the Flames, and then later in his career with the Rangers, you know, a little bit with the Blackhawks, I guess. But, you know, he, to me, should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he was a great player.
Let me ask you guys this question. It was posed to us by Frank Zappia. It's fortuitous because he's, of course, the sponsor of this segment. So really, if you want to sponsor a segment, you get to contribute to the show as well. Frank says that, to me, the NHL Hall of Fame is a little too easy to get into. And I agree with that sentiment. I've referred to it before as the Hall of Very Good.
Absolutely. Hey, that's like I said, if you're not a first ballot, if you don't turn the needle right out of the gate, you're not a Hall of Famer. You just said it a couple of minutes ago. You have to be a special player to get in. We all know who those special players are. Lidstrom, Sackett, Guysman, Mario, all those guys. When we're debating guys that you would never buy a ticket to go watch them.
Mm-hmm.
What are we talking about, right?
By the way, I would put Frank Zappia in the Hall of Fame.
Well, he's in the Illegal Curve Sponsorship Hall of Fame. How about that? And the Illegal Curve Listener Hall of Fame.
But to your point, Jordan, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Based on what you said, some of these obscure names that we are talking about probably will eventually get in.
Just because they have to nominate some. You know,
they eventually have to get in, right?
Yeah. And I think that when you let those guys in, and I'm not, you know, no disrespect to them because they've had fantastic NHL careers, but when you water it down just a little bit, water seeps down downhill.
Yep.
So you water it down a lot just by watering it down a little bit.
Guys, one other guy quickly to me, Daniel Alfredson's a Hall of Famer.
Well, he's going to be eligible for the first time this coming, so, you know, in 2017.
So to what you just said about Roenick, did Daniel Alfredson win a Stanley Cup?
No.
Oh, you're using my logic against me. I like it,
no,
Joel.
But so
he's also not a point per game guy, which is one of the benchmarks I look at. Well, 1,157 points in 1,246 games.
What is that, 0.8, 0.85?
Yeah, well, there's a benchmark.
Was Grant Fuhr a spectacular netminder?
No.
And Grant Fuhr, I was told, and I was reading some stuff, I didn't really watch hockey in the 80s all that much. I mean, only a few years that I can remember.
Yeah, you're such a young kid.
No, it's not, that's not the point.
Hey, Joel,
he always made the save when his team needed it.
Yep.
You know, they were up 7-6, and they had to close it out, and he'd make that big save. So that's how he got in. What's his career? 905 save percentage? So, again, these other netminders eventually probably will go in based on having won Stanley Cups and making those big saves when their team needed it. I'm not banging the drum on Chris Osgood. I'm not a Chris Osgood super fan. I'm just making the case for how bizarre their voting system is with hockey, that maybe eventually they say, hey, this guy won two cups as a starter, made the big saves when he needed it. Was he a Hall of Fame netminder? No, but every single goalie ahead of him in wins, minus Cujo, is in. So that's sometimes their logic, right? I'm not saying Chris Osgood is a Hall of Famer, but we got to think.
Yeah. I think the one thing we can all agree on before we head to break is that there needs to be a better and more transparent voting system, when the voting is calculated.
Absolutely.
That the current old boys club behind the scenes, wink, wink, nudge, nudge is no longer applicable and needs to be a more transparent system.
Agreed. Settle down, Drew.
Let's head to break when we come back. The 2018 Olympics are the topic of conversation. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. We're fired up on this Wednesday evening edition of NHL This Week. Programming note, next week, NHL This Week comes to you on Tuesday night. But it comes to you Tuesday night at 10 o'clock, right after the Manitoba Moose game. Just keep your dial locked to TSN 1290. Mitch Peacock will have the coverage of the Moose game, and then we follow Mitch from 10 p.m. to 12 midnight. Boy, if you think we get a little bit rowdy on a Wednesday evening at 6, by 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night, Lord knows what the show is going to be like. It's going to be sexy.
Yeah,
10 o'clock.
Fights and all.
10 o'clock next Tuesday with NHL This Week. You know that,
I leave the studio for 2 minutes and you're talking about sexy. I don't know what you guys were talking about.
I'm talking about next Tuesday's NHL This Week, 10 o'clock.
Well, I might be bringing the sexy, Drew. I don't know about you.
You bring the sexy. You bring it every week, Ezzy, I got to tell you. Anyways, this segment of the program brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey.
Now that's sexy.
And home of the sexiest sandwich around, the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place to watch tomorrow night's Jets Flyers game, Bernstein's Deli, 5 big screen TVs, full audio and great drinks, specials, not to mention Illegal Curve sandwiches for one and all. Bernsteinsdeli.com.
Yeah, 6 o'clock start for the Jets Flyers game. It makes you feel like it's the first 2 years of the Jets being back in Winnipeg when we were in the Southeast Division and we had all of those 6 o'clock starts.
Is that the first six o'clock weekday start this season? I'm trying to think back if they had, the Saturday night game in Minnesota, but
maybe
I think
they had one
Boston.
Other one.
Boston.
No, Boston was a home game, so that wouldn't have been it.
That's a good point.
And the Rangers game was a weekend game.
Yep.
They had one. Was it maybe at Washington?
At Washington would have been a 6 o'clock game.
It's part of that home and home.
That's right. Yeah, okay. Because, I mean, you're right, Ezzy. Back to when they were in the Southeast Division, all the games seemed like they were at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
And, 6 o'clock comes real quick. Before you know it, it's a blink of an eye, and you're like, oh, game's on.
I like the 7 o'clock start better.
And even that first year, were the home games not 7:30?
The home games were 7:30
that's
first
kind of
year.
Throwing a little bit of a stick in the spoke sometimes when they're trying to get there on time.
Yeah, and there was a couple of home games that started at 6 o'clock, I think, if I recall correctly, for TV purposes.
Yeah.
And the
purposes.
Seats were green.
Yeah, and I walked uphill to school the entire way. Yeah, I walked uphill both ways to school, home and back.
Barefoot.
And I couldn't afford shoes. Shoes are hard to come by back in the day. The NHL and the Olympics, and the yet another twist in that saga earlier today when the NHL offers to the Players Association that they will, we're willing to go to Pyeongchang. We're willing to go because the players have been vocal about their willingness and their desire to go to Pyeongchang. The NHL presents a proposal to the NHLPA, to Donald Fehr, saying, we'll go to Pyeongchang if you agree to extend the duration of the current labor contract, the current collective bargaining agreement contract. NHL shooting for the moon with that attempt and saying, what do we have to lose by it? And if the NHLPA says, no, we're not going to agree to that, do you think that puts an end to the NHL going to Pyeongchang? Is this about the money? You know, this is just sort of another curveball in this Olympic saga.
Yeah, guys, and the weeks leading up to these meetings between the NHL, the NHLPA, the IIHF, and Hockey Canada, USA Hockey, the narrative was all about how, you know, this was about the transportation, the insurance, the accommodation costs being covered by the IOC and maybe a combination of the IOC and the IIHF, right? And now this is, like you mentioned, Drew, now, and Frank Zarevelli, our good buddy, has been all over this for TSN, you know, and this is kind of a new wrinkle here, talking about how, well, if the NHL is going to go to the Olympics in 2018 in South Korea, then the collective bargaining agreement has to be extended. Like, that isn't something that we've heard about. We didn't think that that was going to be part of it at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, guys, this is the way I look at the Olympics, and I remember we talked about it in the summer, Drew. I think the NHL is going to go to the Olympics, and I realize that we're talking about, you know, $10 million plus dollars here, which, you know, by the way, the money that they made from the World Cup, $10 million seems like peanuts to me. So when you're talking about, first of all, if the IIHF is going to cover that, I think that's going to take money away from grassroots hockey potentially in those programs. But listen, they got to get it done.
But we don't know that for sure.
No, we don't. And you know, Joel Drew said
it. This is an international, you know, IIHF, IOC. It might be bribe money.
That might be match fixing. Money
yeah, that might be bribe money.
But the NHL players, Drew, you mentioned it. I mean, the NHL players want to go to the Olympics.
Yeah.
And 2022 is going to be in China, and I think the NHL really wants to be in China.
Sure.
It's one of the biggest markets in the entire world, if not the biggest, right? So I think when you're talking about this, it is going to come down to, I think, the IIHF having to kick in some money, the IOC having to kick in some money. I think right now it's just posturing, deadline hunting. I mean, they're going to go.
But you've had players, Alex Ovechkin comes to mind, who's been vocal, who said, I don't care about my valid contract. If I'm selected to play for Team Russia, I'm just going to leave the Capitals and go. Does the NHL want to get into really a significant fight with some of their best players who want to go to the Olympics over, let's be honest, is pocket change on a per team basis? I mean, we're talking, you know, if it's $10 million, what are we talking about? We're talking about, you know, $300,000 per team. You know, we're talking about minimal amounts of money. Is this something for the NHL and the ownership, you know, to really, you know, to die on the hill over?
Well, the one thing is, the NHL, the owners do not like shutting down their league for a couple of weeks. And in this case, what is it, a 15-hour time difference?
Yeah.
So you can't just in and out this one. I mean, these players aren't coming back and right back into the swing of things the next day, right? So you're almost shutting down for, what, 3 weeks now?
Well,
based on the lead-up and then and coming back and the hangover after the Olympics. Owners aren't going to want that. This whole CBA thing, I'm not sure what the hidden plan here is. Because what is it? The opt-out is 2019 for the players?
It's 2020 would be the contract goes through to 2022, but the opt-out would be 2020.
And Alan Walsh has already warned us, be ready for another lockout at some point.
Well, logic would dictate that you'd be foolish not to expect another lockout, because every single time the owners have had the opportunity to lock out the players.
I thought you were going to say it would be foolish of us to listen to anything Alan Walsh says.
Well, no, he's right. He said, you know, why shouldn't you expect a lockout? Because the owners do it every single time. The last lockout was one of the more asinine lockouts ever. No one was quite sure what they were fighting about. The next one's even going to be stupider.
HRR.
To what you said, though, I'm not sure if the NHL wants to fight their big guys. Alexander Ovechkin has been very outspoken about wanting to go, and he's going to go regardless. I mean, the Capitals can even suspend him. He's still going to go. And there's going to be some other players.
Because if they suspend him and he goes, it's not like they're not going to welcome him back with open arms.
Exactly.
You don't think Connor McDavid, a guy who's never had the opportunity to go to an Olympics, doesn't want to go to...
But he won't be as outspoken as a guy like Ovechkin who wants to go play for Russia and, of course, wants to get that first
2 years from now he might be, if he's the face of the league, if they're marketing everything around him like they should, but they won't because they're stupid.
And NBC's got a big chip in this.
NBC is the big one. NBC, because they're they hold the TV purse strings for the NHL. They're the broadcaster of the Olympics.
Yeah.
You don't think that if the NHL, you know, if NBC and Comcast and that entire consortium taps Mr. Bettman on the shoulder and says, hey, our TV deal is coming up relatively soon.
Guess what?
We want you in South Korea, and then we want you in China, and we want you to dance for your money. they'll be dancing.
Yeah. Right, and further to your point, how many people are going to watch the Olympics in Canada and the U.S. if NHL players don't go? I will, and I think hardcore hockey fans will, but I think at the end of the day, you want to see the top players in the world, don't you, do you not?
Well, I all due respect to the guy. I mean, otherwise you're talking about, you know, a guy like Derek Roy is going to be representing Canada, you know, at the 2018 Olympics.
Hey, Derek Roy is a good hockey player.
Derek Roy is not a guy you want to see. You're going to stay up 15 hours, you know, and you're going to wake up at 3 in the morning to watch.
Are you referencing the Deutschland Cup?
That's where he played. Is the Deutschland Cup that just occurred.
But that's the other thing. I mean, we're talking about this is in like 15, 16 months already. So let's say this drop dead date is in January. Hey, we're going or we're not going. It may not be the Derek Roys. Maybe they just turn this into a World Junior Part 2 or something like that, where it turns into an under, you know, maybe
which is what they do with soccer.
A young guns team like we saw at the World Cup, where it's an under 23 thing or something.
Which is what they do in soccer. The Olympics for soccer, I believe it's an under 22 or under 21 tournament. There's no, you know, superstars. You don't see Lionel Messi, you know, playing, you know, at the Olympics because it's for the younger generation.
Yeah, and I agree with what Joel's saying. I mean, from the owner's perspective, I get you don't want to shut down the league for 17 days, 20 days, whatever it is, and have a John Tavares situation like you did in 2014 where he got injured, right? So I can see, you know, the hesitation from the owner's part. But, I mean, come on, guys. I mean, the NHL has been participating in the Olympics since 1998. They've already gone to Asia before. So, I mean, I think that argument, you're either in or you're not in. And I think at the end of the day, because there's going to be pressure from the NHLPA and there might be pressure from other external sources, I do think they're going
to
go.
Well, you know, they want to go to Beijing in 2022. I think everybody acknowledges that. I mean, do they not think that, well, 2018, you know, South Korea, people in Beijing might fall in love with hockey, even if it's played in South Korea, and look how excited they are. Yeah. It's not like they're not going to be watching the Olympics in Beijing or in China, and they're only going to tune in, you know, during that brief two-week window in 2022. They might be able to tune in 2018, fall in love with your game, and then gear up even more enthusiasm and anticipation for when it's going to be live in their country in 2022.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I also think it's important just because I don't think the World Cup of Hockey really was the best on best.
Yeah, that was
As I'm concerned, I mean, Canada-Europe, I mean, was that series really riveting? I mean, sure. I mean, we saw a lot of you know, promise and excitement coming from Team North America, and I think a lot of people were upset that they didn't
Nobody
make it to the final.
Nobody gave a crap about that final. There was a Jets preseason game that you flip the channels. Oh yeah, there's a World Cup final game on.
Yeah.
Nobody, you know, and that's another mistake the league made by scheduling that final.
Yeah, they bastardized their own product.
Yeah.
They said, hey, you know, we're gonna, you know. The litany of mistakes the NHL makes could make up an entire four-hour show, never mind just a two-hour Wednesday show.
Go to the Olympics.
Yeah. Don't tell me it's about money, because it's not about the expense that you would be facing, because Rene Fasel and the IIHF have said, we'll take care of that. Either you can't be half pregnant. Either you're in for 2018 and 2022, and then probably the foreseeable future, or you're out.
You can be half-baked, though.
Well, some have said that you're permanently half-baked, has he? Let's head to break. When we come back, what do you guys want to do? Trade rumors or talk about the injuries in today's that came out today?
Let's do a little mishmash.
We'll do a little mishmash, a little Wallablazoo or something like that. I don't know. I just made up a word. You're listening to NHL This Week.
We're Balderdash, live, Drew.
Balderdash on TSN 1290. One final segment. A very spirited and heated NHL This Week. I like it. You guys brought some juice with you today. I like it. Yeah. Anyways, one final segment on this Wednesday evening. It is brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Check them out. They do great work.
They do, and, you know, we were speaking about the World Cup earlier, and the Keener Jerseys guys posted a couple of Team Canada jerseys that they recently did from the World Cup. Brad Marchand, Sidney Crosby. Marchand was really good at that tournament on that top line with Bergeron and Crosby, so you know, go check him out. Definitely get your jerseys customized. You know,
he was really good last season too.
Yep. Yeah, he's been really good this year too. I think he leads the NHL forwards, if I'm not mistaken, in Corsi so far this season. And I believe Blake Wheeler is second in the NHL in Corsi at this stage of the season. Quick scoreboard update, if you will. Capitals and the Penguins, they're doing battle in the second period. The Caps jumping out and all over the Pittsburgh Penguins. 3-0 Capitals after the first period, early in the second. Oshie, Backstrom, and Oshie.
This is a rematch of the playoffs last year.
It certainly is a rematch. The Capitals looking for a little bit of revenge. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it probably won't do enough to heal the wounds of what was a very disappointing end to the season for the Caps last season. But so far, so good tonight. Up 3-0 on the Pittsburgh Penguins, and still to come tonight, a riveting matchup between the Arizona Coyotes and the Calgary Flames. Try to withhold the excitement until that one gets underway.
I bet that'll be actually a pretty good game, Drew, when you consider that Johnny Gaudreau's out of the lineup and the Arizona Coyotes are probably looking at the Flames and they're saying, well, the Flames are hurting right now. This is an opportunity for us to make some hay in the standing. So
well, you
don't discount that game.
I'm going to discount that game, but you mentioned Gaudreau, and let's talk about his injury. He's out with a fractured finger as he undergoes surgery, likely to be out, I believe it's 4 to 6 weeks is the estimated time frame. That could change, of course, when they get in there and see what they're actually dealing with. Calgary Flames, they were sort of an attractive, maybe a bit of a sleeper pick to some teams in the Western Conference or in the Pacific Division, off to a horrendous 6-10-1 start. This news certainly doesn't help matters for the Calgary Flames.
It certainly will not. I mean, they've only got 5 goals in their last 4 games, and Gaudreau's in on 4 of those. 3 goals, 1 assist. I mean, he's finally starting to ramp it up a little bit, and of course, after holding out for a couple of games at the beginning of the season, not sure exactly how many games he missed. Drew, this is not going to help this team. Of all the injuries that came out today, the other injuries, Darren Helm, of course, and Steven Stamkos, Taylor Hall.
Mm-hmm.
That one and the Taylor Hall one are the two that certainly stand out. Steven Stamkos, I think the Lightning can survive without him. They obviously
went
to the Cup
year.
Final without him. Yeah. Darren Helm, grinding his way to some goals at the Wings, but
he's a contributor for the Red Wings, but he's not. Taylor Hall out 3 to 4 weeks. He had surgery on his left knee. I mean, Taylor Hall is the New Jersey Devils' offense,
along with Camilleri.
Hall is, when they acquired him from Edmonton, everyone said they stole him. They still did steal him from the Oilers. I mean, losing Taylor Hall. The Devils have been off to a very good start this year. This is a blow they did not need.
We haven't talked about the Devils once this year. They're third place in the Eastern Conference, Drew.
Ask you, Ezzy, what do you think about Marty Brodeur suiting up for the St. Louis Blues alumni team at the upcoming Winter Classic between the Blues and the Blackhawks?
Well, I mean, he's not really a St. Louis Blue. He played one season there, and how many games did he even play? 15 or something?
If that.
But, the Devils are off to a really good start, and I agree with you, actually. I mean, Taylor Hall, losing him is...
He's always surprised when he agrees with me.
No, I'm not, Drew. And, I mean, we talked about it with Scott Burnside, guys. I mean, the Tampa Bay Lightning lose Steven Stamkos. You've still got Nikita Kucherov.
Yeah.
You've still got Tyler Johnson.
You've still
got Andre Palat, right, Joel? So, I mean...
Yeah, they went to the Cup Final minus Steven Stamkos last year. Not Cup Final, but they made that conference final run. Sorry.
And what really hurts the Devils as well is Michael Camilleri is out of the lineup right now for personal reasons, so they miss him. But, I mean, Taylor Hall has been playing on that top line with Travis Zajac and P.A. Parenteau for most of the season, and Hall's tied for the team lead in points with Damon Severson. So, I mean, it's a huge loss. It's only 4 weeks, though. I mean, Steven Stamkos could be out much longer. It looks like he could be out, 6 to 8 weeks. Hopefully not. But so when you're talking about, Johnny Gaudreau and Taylor Hall, I think those are bigger losses for those teams because the Tampa Bay Lightning, as you know, Drew, are a deep team. They've been to the Stanley Cup Finals, the Eastern Conference Finals. So,
well, it goes to show you how good of a job Stevie Yzerman has done. Yeah. Steve Stamkos, again, if you missed it, he's out indefinitely with a lateral meniscus tear in his knee. And we're not really expecting the Lightning to skip a beat at all.
No.
Because,
it's a stacked team.
Well, Drouin, Nikita Kucherov is you know, tied with Mark Scheifele for the lead in points in the NHL.
Killorn's an underrated player. Killorn, Cedric Paquette is an underrated player.
Tyler Johnson.
Good goaltending.
I mean, you have Hedman and Strahlman.
That's just it.
It's a perennial playoff team at this point, Drew. I wanted to mention, though, you know, just quickly about Stamkos. It's really unfortunate, guys, because, you know, he goes through the blood clots and all of that last year.
Healthy.
And then all of those rumors that he was going to leave Tampa Bay and go sign with the Toronto Maple Leafs, Drew. Mm-hmm. So he signs that eight-year deal, and he's I believe second in the league in scoring right now, second or third in the league in scoring, and, you know, he gets injured again.
Not to mention that broken leg that forced him to miss Sochi.
Sure. Stamkos, 20 points so far this season. And, you know,
right
that
behind Scheifele and Kucherov.
Right, that's right. Yeah. So, I mean, certainly a big loss, but we expect that the Lightning are not going to be. Let me put it this way. I think the Taylor Hall loss for the Devils is way more significant.
At least it's not too long. I mean, he misses a month as opposed to, you know, being out like
multiple months.
Right.
Yeah, that's the only, I guess, redeeming, the silver lining, I suppose, for the New Jersey Devils. But as you guys mentioned, sort of a Black Wednesday for injuries in the NHL with Stamkos, Taylor Hall, and, you know, Darren Helm, you mentioned, and help me out, I'm missing one other.
Did you say Gaudreau?
No, Gaudreau, thank you.
Get well soon, boys.
There you go. Heal up. That's it for the Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our guest, Scott Burnside of ESPN.com, and Adam Kimmelman of NHL.com. Big props to Sean, doing a great job producing the program. For Joel Marcoux, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.